Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Kupfer.
Hello.
And this week's special guest, the fifth Sci Guy, Noah Finn.
Hey!
This week, we're talking about cookie killers and serial psychopaths.
Cookie killers?
Cookie. As in, like,
cookie.
Quirky.
Oh, your silly little accent. Okay.
But first, we have a wee review. This one is 5 stars. It says, "Wish I listened sooner." It also goes on to say, "I've been a fan of these lovely lads individually for a while, but until recently, I haven't listened to Sci Guys because science has never interested me. However, after becoming hooked after listening to The Science of Gender, these silly boys have proved me wrong, and I can now say that science is very interesting if it's presented in the right way. They really do the job of making such complicated things accessible in such a funny and entertaining way. 10 out of 10, would podcast again."
Ah, oh, that's very nice.
I mean, if ever we need to explain why we do the show, we can just show that exact review.
Do you ever read out, like, 2-star reviews?
No.
3 stars?
Well, we don't get those because it's impossible. You can only give a 5-star. Go and give a 5-star and see for yourself.
All right, I'll test that one out.
And I've got a question for everyone who's watching, listening, and here in the room. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify or anywhere else, head to YouTube, get down to the comments, and answer this question. The question is, have you ever killed a man? Be honest.
In Sims, in Call of Duty, in Sims, maybe Grand Theft Auto, Minecraft.
You better watch out, buddy.
I once had a dream that I killed a man, and I thought I'd actually killed a man for several weeks.
Oh, that's very stressful.
That's too long to think that you'd actually killed a man. And it being...
I wasn't in a good place.
I was like, this was the bad time.
Oh, I remember this, actually. Yeah. Well, we started this episode off in a very, very positive way, which makes sense, because today we're talking about serial killers, because that's what our patrons voted in. And as we all know, serial killers are a very fun and cookie little topic for people to get interested in and make edits out of and fan cams and all of that nonsense. Isn't that true?
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Evidently so. So let's get into serial killers, the actual topic here. First off, I want to ask you this question. What is a serial killer? Do not answer Noah. He's not a serial killer.
Oh,
he's
right.
He's just a serial killer of Sims.
I thought you just wanted to
answer Noah.
Noah. Yeah, someone who kills more than once in a long, in like a chain of killings.
I think it's not more than once. Is a serial killer, is it like, I'm not sure the exact number that distinguishes you from like a killer or like a mass murderer or a serial killer, but surely a serial killer is like maybe like 5 or more. They got like a regular routine of killing.
Okay, so this is interesting. You're kind of hitting on all of the right topics here. There are a bunch of different definitions for different types of homicide. So first off, homicide is just killing another person. Homo being
homo
from the...
Homicide, man side.
Yeah, man side.
Man
side, like from the Greek, you know, man or... Yeah, Greek, right? Greek? Because Latin is homo.
Mm.
Yeah, which... No. Latin... Oh, God.
So it's Latin.
It's Latin.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what's going on in my head right now. There's homo and homo. One of them means same, and one of them means man.
Yes.
And I can't remember which language which is from. I'm going to say that homo, meaning same, is from the Greek, and homo, meaning man, is Latin.
I'm pretty sure that's right. Greeks are more gay than the Latin, though.
You did
no. You didn't study Latin, then. Gosh,
buddy.
They were real
Latin?
Gay.
The Romans were super gay. They had a whole thing. We'll talk about it at some point. Anyway, serial murder, also called serial killing, is the unlawful homicide of at least 2 people carried out by the same person or persons in a separate event, in separate events occurring at different times. Although this definition is widely accepted, the crime is not formally recognized in any legal code, including that of the United States. States. Serial murder is distinguished from mass murder in which several victims are murdered at the same time and place. That is from Britannica.
Okay.
So what I really wanted to get at here is the sort of definition of serial killers as compared to mass murderers, because these are kind of murky terms for, I guess, the general public. Like, people don't necessarily know what the exact difference is. So mass murder is essentially killing a lot of people at once. I think it's three or more people at once. Serial murder, you need to have sort of cool down time between it, right? You can't sort of go from an emotional high of killing someone and then hop right into killing someone else and then right into killing someone else. There needs to be that sort of cool down period. You need to wait a bit, collect yourself, and then go and kill someone else after that.
Right.
But again, it's not something that is, you know, legally sort of recognized. It's something that, I guess, the media deals more with. Or, you know, if the police are looking for someone, they'll say, we're looking for a serial murderer, because it's someone who has committed a lot of murders. So serial meaning something that happens kind of regularly. I mean, we talk about the old Doctor Who serials, you know, if a TV show is serialized, right? That sort of stuff. So you can see where the word serial comes in to mean serial killer, right?
Yes.
Okay, so serial killers are people that kill multiple people on different occasions.
Right.
Right? They do it. They make a habit of it. Gosh, this is a very dark topic. And yet, somehow, our sort of public view of it has made it so that it's not as dark as it actually is.
Yeah.
And I just kind of want to talk about homicide in general. So homicide is legally defined as the killing of another person. It's an all-inclusive term. It encapsulates sort of all kinds of killing, right?
Right.
Homo, coming from the homo, meaning man, and side, meaning to kill. Yeah. If you add side to the end of it, it means you're killing something. So patricide, killing your dad. Regicide, killing a king.
Leucocide. Sounds like I can't pronounce leucocide. Leucocide.
That would be a very, very, very unfortunate misunderstanding there. Hey, man, can you get me some leucocide from the shops, please? And you come home with Luke's head on a pike.
It worries me how readily your mind went to leucocide.
Leucocide. It does sound like leucocide.
Another main thing here as well is that serial homicide, so, you know, serial killings have to be intentional, right? Mm. You can't just accidentally do a bunch of manslaughters and call that serial killing. There needs to be an intent.
Can you do a bunch of homicides and claim that you just did a bunch of manslaughters?
What if it's just a coincidence?
It's just a coincidence that I slipped and my knife accidentally stabbed her 37 times and they were all blonde women under the age of 35. What a coincidence! Whoops!
Had a twitch or something.
No.
Bad at driving. And every week, I'm really bad at driving.
Anyway, serial killers, that's what a serial killer is. Someone that kills multiple people on different occasions and they intend to do it. So do you know what sort of prevalence of serial killers maybe? Do you know how maybe that's changed over time? What do you know about serial killers?
I mean, what do I know about serial killers? I want to say that there's more serial killers now, but I feel like it would be a lot more difficult today to be a serial killer than it would have been in the 1800s. They didn't have CCTV. They just had moors that they dumped bodies in.
Being a murderer was a lot easier before we kind of brought in modern, I guess, what's the word? Forensic techniques.
Yeah,
I mean, we did an episode on forensics. You can go ahead and watch that. But yeah, modern forensic techniques have made it a lot easier to catch serial killers. I mean, way back then, they were walking around crime scenes. They were touching stuff up. They didn't care about whose blood it was. It didn't make a difference. That's just blood.
Yeah.
Whereas now, we take a sample of that blood and we can figure out, oh, whose blood is this?
And I think you'd be surprised, well, I was certainly surprised at how modern some of the stuff that we take for granted is. So there's a great show called Life on Mars on BBC that was in the early 2000s about a detective who gets transported back to 1970 and has to be a detective in 1970.
Oh my God.
And he says stuff like, take fingerprints from the body. And they laugh at him because they're like, you can't take fingerprints from skin. That's ridiculous. And that's just the 70s, and this was in the 2000s. That's at the time, 30 years ago, such a basic thing, finding out if someone has touched a person who's now dead, was not possible.
That's insane.
And if you think about it now as well, DNA, we've been using DNA evidence for a bit, but also now that there's a rise of, let's say, those companies that take your DNA and give you your family history back, there is a much wider bank of DNA that we've got for people now than we used to.
Is it accessible to law enforcement?
I know that it was for one serial killer was caught because his family put in their and that's the thing. That's what you need to pay attention to as well. The danger with all of these sort of things is that you don't need to give someone your DNA. If someone has your mum's, your sister's, your brother's, and your dad's DNA, they can find you. Because there's not that much difference between, you know what I mean? Like, because your sister is a combination of your mum and your dad, and you're a combination of your mum and your dad. You can figure that out. There's enough similarities there to be like, it's probably this one, right?
You guys, if you're planning on doing a serial killing, just don't go on 23andMe. It doesn't really matter how white you are.
Maybe don't do the serial killings in the first place, is I think the main takeaway that you should probably
obviously.
Yeah, but yeah, so prevalence. So you're saying that you would have thought they would have decreased or increased? What are you saying?
Well, I don't know, because there's so many like factors that go into like why somebody would become a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like nowadays there's more like external things that would be interfering in people's lives that could lead them around the door, like down the wrong path. Like I feel like 500 years ago, people lived quite simple lives and didn't have access to like... Like, you can watch beheadings online, and people will be, like, extremist? Extremized? What's the word?
Oh, radicalized.
Radicalized. People will be radicalized from the internet, and I feel like, I don't know, I want to say there's more now.
Really? Well, from what I've seen, they seem to have decreased quite a lot. There was maybe a surge in the sort of 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
But it's kind of really gone down. I mean, you've kind of hit the nail on the head as to one of the reasons why. It seems that it's just a lot harder to get away with that kind of stuff now. I mean, don't get me wrong, the police are still pretty bloody terrible at doing their jobs. I mean, like, absolutely abysmal at doing their jobs. They suck. But
keep going.
But it is a lot easier to get caught now.
He's got away with loads.
I swear to God, if I was a serial killer, I would only get away for it. I would only get away with it as long as I kept my mouth shut. Which, man, I'd be dropping hints on this podcast all the time. I'd be like leaving cryptic clues in the descriptions and everything. Oh man,
I don't know what I'd do, because you'd be saying some stuff to me as well. And I just have to figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think I was going a little bit crazy. I was like, no way Corey's killing people. Like, that's insane.
Oh, gosh, I'm really telling on myself here.
Yeah.
My flatmate in uni was a med student, right? And so she came home after doing anatomy for that day. And she was like, oh, so today it was mad. We had to rip eyes out of the cadaver's eye socket. And I was like, oh, man, I really wish I'd done medicine. Because I just want to like rip eyes out of an eye socket of a cadaver and see what's going on. Do you guys not want to do like a dissection of a human and see what's going on inside?
I mean, it would be interesting. That doesn't mean I want to rip eyes out of a cadaver. It would be interesting to like...
Yeah, it's interesting.
No, it would be interesting to like look at like a body in the way that you see them in like anatomy books. But,
yeah, but
I don't
get your
think
hands
I enjoy
all,
it that
like,
much.
Get your hands all dirty, you know, like hands-on experience.
No, see, that's like the worst part for me. So like that's kind of worrying.
You're wearing gloves.
I still think that's gross. I don't want to handle people's insides.
Look, I wouldn't kill someone to do it, but let's say we're in a plane crash and someone just happens to die with a perfectly preserved body.
No, you should stop talking.
I'm rooting around in them organs. I'm having to see as to how they do.
And I would just like to say, if this clip is being used in a court proceeding, I'd like to say hello to the jury and thank you for your public service.
No, look, this is one of those things where I'm like, oh man, at some point maybe I'll start being a med student just to get to that point, and then I'll drop out. It's interesting. That's all I'm saying. It just seems really, really interesting. I just want to understand what's going on inside of us. It's actually
there are ways to do that.
Yeah.
Not
cutting open
that,
cadaver.
No.
It's entirely consensual. Anyway, let's talk more about the prevalence of serial killers. Now, it says here that 1 in 3 people are serial killers, and there's 3 of... I'm joking.
1 in 3 murderers are serial killers?
No, there's 3 of us, Luke.
Okay.
That was the joke.
Okay.
Well, it's not me.
It's me!
No, so the thing is that I think we think there are more serial killers than there are. It says here that, you know, popular media, academic researchers, they said that there were on average 5,000 victims each year in the US, but actually, the number seems to be maybe quite a bit lower than that. I mean, in the 1980s, the real number was probably fewer than 200.
How do they figure out that they're victims of serial killings and not just, like, victims of, like, a one-off murder?
Well, that's the thing. That's why there was such a high number before.
Okay.
That's where you get the difference in some of these data points, in that with the higher numbers, they're kind of just taking unexplained murders and linking them all together, where they probably shouldn't.
It's very silly.
So that kind of exaggeration of the number of serial killers, I feel, has kind of led to this idea that there are a lot of them. Like, there aren't that many serial killers in the world, and yet they're such a, I guess, cultural icon. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's weird to say a cultural icon, but they are worshipped in a sense, even if it's in infamy, right? You know, you've got true crime podcasts, you've got multiple films about your famous serial killers, Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, all of that sort of stuff. There's TV shows about serial killers, like Dexter, for example, right? We talk about serial killers quite often, and for quite a, for such like a sort of uncommon crime, it's weird that literally every single person who speaks English probably knows what a serial killer is, right?
Yeah, it's interesting that people will be like, oh, I'm scared I'm going to be killed by a serial killer. It's like, it's very unlikely.
That's so incredibly unlikely.
Scared they're going to die on planes, too. That's also very unlikely.
That is also unlikely,
So serial killers do exist, even though they're not as common as you might think. But, you know, we want to kind of get into the head of a serial killer now, don't we? I assume that's what people wanted us to talk about when they requested we do an episode on serial killers. And that makes sense, because when you look at all of the studies on serial killers, they're really just, I guess, psychological profiles. A lot of them are case studies. I mean, that is generally what people try to look at. And we'll kind of talk about maybe some of the problems with that in a little bit. Just before we jump into that, though, very quickly, I'll give you some numbers to stick with you. Serial murders are about 1% of all murders. It's not very common. If we look at the sort of gender ratio of this, seriously. So by 2010, most serial killers in the US were men. That's 2,910 compared to 294 women serial killers. Also, slightly more than half of all serial killers in the studied range were white. 51.7%. And, you know, we're talking about the kind of that decrease of serial killers over time. And we've also noticed, I guess, an increase in mass murders, or at least at the very least, it seems that there's been an increase in mass murders, right? I mean, especially in the US, with guns and schools and nightclubs and cinemas and churches and synagogues.
And anywhere where there's a gathering of people.
Yeah, especially minorities that you don't like. Anyway, so the point here is that I'm going to make very briefly is that some people have suggested, oh, hey, maybe serial killers have just become mass murderers now. But the thing with that is that what's been said by, I guess, experts is that they don't really have the same sort of psychological profile.
Ah.
Yeah, so they're not really the same kind of person. I mean, it kind of makes sense a little bit when you think about it as well, if you look at the sort of, I guess, stereotypes that are associated with these two different kinds of people. I'm not saying that the stereotypes are absolutely scientific fact, but You can see that there are very different kinds of crimes. There's a very big difference between taking a gun and shooting a lot of people at once in what could be a sort of fit of rage, one emotional state, and this sort of premeditated, let's kill someone, see how it feels, do it again, see how it feels, and have to continually evade people. Because if you think about it, like a lot of mass murderers either kill themselves or turn themselves in.
Yeah. Right? Or they want to be killed by law enforcement a lot of the time.
Exactly.
As well.
Like death by cop. Like,
Well, it's also like the motivation is obviously very different. Like if you're a mass killer, you're a serial killer, and you're like, you're really good at covering up, surely.
Yes.
And like that's like a routine kind of thing. Like that's like, it's almost like a, not, I'm not going to say it's a job, but it's like a lot of work goes into that.
That's your dedication, yeah.
Yeah, but whereas like if you're a mass killer and like, say like you're a school shooter, the motivation is that people haven't treated you well at school. And then that happens. It's not the same as like going out, finding someone, killing them, and then, you know, doing the same next month.
And it's also a lot more personal as well, if you think about it. You know, like a mass murder is oftentimes attacking a group or it's for some kind of ideology, and serial killers seem to not do that. They seem to be more sort of, okay, this is a very personal thing. And, you know, that's why with certain serial killers, you'll see them going after the same kind of person.
Yeah.
And what's interesting as well is I was reading this sort of article that was looking at doctors who were serial killers sort of in the past. So there was, it seemed to be, and I don't know how sort of, I guess, reputable this is, but from what I read there, it seems that there were more doctors who were serial killers in the past, you know, quite a long time ago. And that's kind of decreased now. But if you think about it, if you're a serial killer, or if you've got that kind of urge to like cut people up and look inside them, and you don't really have the empathy to care to care about the harm that you cause to people,
right?
It would make sense to become a doctor, you know, a century or two ago, because that's a job where you get to cut into people and you know, like, you do what you want. And if you start cutting into people as a doctor, you're like, oh man, this is cool, and I don't have any empathy. You might go ahead and start killing people. Like, there's the sort of idea, I don't know if it's a myth or not, but there was the idea that Jack the Ripper was a doctor, right?
Did they ever find out who that was?
Jack the Ripper? No, I don't think so. I mean, there's no chance of finding out who Jack the Ripper is at this point.
No, yeah, he's long gone.
So, Corey, if you were wanting to be a murderer then, mm-hmm. which job would you take up if doctoring is not the one now?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you'd have to have a job wherein you're able to interact with people that won't be missed, but also in such a way that... Look, no, 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 no.
What?
No,
what?
Don't get me to confess to this now.
I'm an undercover cop. You're under arrest.
So I just want to quickly touch on one more time for the last time, the sort of prevalence of serial killers in the US. So there's a bunch of different numbers. I've had 2,000 active serial killers. Apparently, there's been over 751,785 murders carried out in the US since 1976. And someone looked at all of those. Those aren't necessarily all serial yeah. murders. Someone looked at all of those, developed an algorithm to look through them and try to track unsolved murders. And from that, that's where they got the sort of 2,000 number. There's someone else named Michael Arntfield who thinks that that number is a lot higher, 3,000 or 4,000. He says that the FBI estimates aren't very reliable. And I'm going to read this verbatim from where I found it. It says, he is also the author of 12 books if you're interested in the mind of a serial killer. So maybe this man has a vested interest in making people think there are more serial killers than there are. That's all I'm going to say.
I was going to say, why does he know that there's more?
Because he used to work as a police detective.
That's not reassuring.
I honestly do not trust this man. He could be right, but I don't trust this man at all on the basis of him being a former police detective and also someone who is selling books on serial killers, oh. right? Like, if you are both of those things and you're saying, actually, there are way more serial killers than you think.
You guys don't even know.
You guys don't even know.
There's way more serial killers out there.
Read my book to find out, though. Like, just read my book to find out. Yeah, no, so, I mean, the number of serial killers, it's hard to pinpoint because, I mean, by their very nature,
yeah.
if we knew how many serial killers there were, people wouldn't be out there serial killing because we'd chuck them all in jail or, yeah. I don't know, make them vets or put them on the police force, whatever it is we do.
With vets?
I don't know. Let them kill animals, you know. A healthy outlet.
I feel like euthanizing an animal for like old age is not quite coming from the same motivation as like murdering a person.
Yeah, you don't get the same rush. Anyway, no.
Are you trying to come across as a bit of a serial killer?
I'm not trying, it's just happening.
Well, good to be naturally good at something.
So let's get into the mind of a serial killer then. So what would you say...
Yeah, what is it like being you, yeah. Corey?
Oh, gosh, guys, come on. What would you say the sort of... if you were to use one word to describe the sort of psychology of a serial killer, what might it be?
Psychopath.
Psychopath. Okay, good. That's dead wrong. No, oh, do you know wow. why psychopath might be a poor term to use to describe anyone?
I feel like I should know this.
Do they not exist? Are they not real?
Yeah, that's right. I thought you would know this. You study psychology, Noah, a little bit.
We did psychopath. Pathology.
So, I mean, if you...
I don't remember, though.
If you kind of... No, it's okay. If you kind of look into this, and this is a very, very common thing. People think that psychopathy is an actual disorder. It's an actual thing. Psychopathy is more of a colloquial name to sort of refer to people who have antisocial personality disorder, ASPD, right? And it's not a great term. It's a pretty rubbish way of describing that group of people.
My apologies.
Well, no, it makes sense, right? And it's more of a legal term than it is even remotely, I guess, a medical or scientific term, right?
Yeah.
It'd be used more there than anywhere else. And I'm not even saying that it is an official legal term.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually specifically refer to any sort of psychological profile or type. It's just a word we use to describe people that have antisocial personality disorder, and not a great word that we use to describe it. I've got a little quote here. It says, "While antisocial personality disorder is a medical diagnosis, the term psychopathy, which belongs to the sphere of forensic psychiatry, may be understood as a legal diagnosis. It's still not possible to identify an effective treatment for serial killers." Right? And it makes sense, because serial killers aren't necessarily all going to have the same underlying psychology. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously, you'd probably have to have a lower level of empathy. Empathy, you know, and a desire to, like, you know, hurt people or kill people or anything like that. But other than that, like, other than those two things, you don't, there's like, you could have kind of any other underlying psychology, right? There's
yeah.
a lot of different ways that you could end up having low empathy and a desire to, you know, harm others, or a desire to, you know, like, you know, to fall through and end up killing people.
Yeah, it's really interesting as well, because as far as I've seen, so there's two things. Again, number two thing that you'll have to fact check for me, Corey, but I find it so interesting that it's worth mentioning, is that there's something along the lines of, it's from old literature, so it used the word psychopath, but it talked about the level of psychopath or the level of people with low empathy is kind of stable within the population. Because if there's a low level of people with low empathy, then the conditions, the people, that everybody else who has the empathy gets complacent, and it's now easier to be somebody to get away with being a low empathy person. And if there's too many people with low empathy, then the rest of the population are really like attuned and pay close attention to, and those people are more easily detected and pushed out of the society. So the there's like a sweet spot of population level for low empathy, right? And the second thing is I find it very interesting that it's like described as like a disorder, because obviously in a social setting it's not necessarily a good thing for everybody else, but there's a very clear evolutionary, it's an evolutionary sort of lane that somebody could take, that a genome could take, is to go, oh, actually there are certain things, there are certain like societally expected things in this society, and because they're expected, everybody thinks that you're doing them automatically. I, as a genome, could randomly evolve and then be more successful if I take advantage of other people's
trust.
Yeah, exactly. And I could get like a slightly freer ride, and my genes are then going to be more successful in the gene pool. That's to call that a disorder is a sort of a, it's an interest. I understand that there are also probably other ways, like, I won't ruin where we're going.
Oh, no, absolutely.
There are other ways that somebody could have low empathy. I've read a couple of books about psychopathy, in quotes, which could be like structural changes in the brain, for example. But it's also, there is also a clear way how a genome could end up being that way.
Well, yeah, and I think you've kind of touched on something that I find really interesting. I think our individualism, that sort of underlying individualism that's very present in, let's say, sort of Western culture. And when I say Western culture, I'm really mainly talking about the UK and the US to an extreme degree. Oh my God, the US, absolutely. Canada, those sorts of places, right? I think that level of individualism has absolutely ruined our understanding of evolution, genetics, because we look at it as an individual's sort of ability to survive and pass on their genes, as opposed to thinking about the entire population, right? If you look at the sort of the gay uncle theory, where, you know, if there's sort of idea that if you've got sort of multiple children or multiple boys, you're more likely to have the younger ones being gay, and that could be sort of due to the more sort of the sort of hormone washes in the womb or whatever, but the evolutionary benefit to that is that you then have someone with your genetics who is there to care for your children, right? You've already made enough males who are going to go off and sire other children elsewhere. And now you've got a, now you've got a male who is not going to go off and create their own offspring, but is going to be there and present to help care for the offspring of similar genetics, right? And, you know, if you look at other species and, you know, population, like population wide, like think about eusocial insects, right? It's not a great evolutionary thing for the individual insect who gets its head ripped off, right? Or, you know, who is one of the workers, right, who sacrifices themselves to save the queen or to save the rest of the colony.
That benefits the community.
But it benefits the community, and we should probably think about evolution less in terms of individual benefit. I mean, there are obviously upsides to that, and that does work in some cases, but evolutionarily speaking, it's not always going to be about individual benefit. It's sometimes going to be about the species as a whole, or, you know, the sort of genes coming from, you know, one set of parents, right? Like there's more to it than survival of the fittest on an absolute individual level, you know? And that level of individualism just completely messes with our understanding of that.
That level of individualism also, however, creates the perfect opportunity for people with lower empathy to sort of succeed. If you're in a society where I studied economics, and economics tries to create basically at least foundational economics tries to create like a sort of model of how people are inherently selfish, but then they do selfless things for a selfish reason. It's all very interesting. There's a kind of Adlerian psychology stuff covers that as well to a certain extent. There's the kind of joke. I mean, there is the statement, which is, I think, probably actually potentially not true, about like most CEOs are sociopaths or something. And it turns out that's actually...
There was like a higher rate of sociopaths within that role, like higher ups.
Yeah. Which makes sense. But then also, you don't need to be a sociopath to succeed there, right? What I'm saying is people are very much able to explain away anything to themselves. People can justify what they want to do pretty bloody well, right? I mean, if you look at the logic that some CEOs use, some people, those higher ups use, it doesn't make any sense. But you can see how they can use it to convince themselves that what they're doing is fine. Like, that's why I love sometimes having conversations with capitalists who are, like, you know, absolutely, almost absolutely blind to all of the problems with capitalism, because they're like, oh, but actually it's good in this way that I've made up in my head that makes me able to sleep at night, right? I think it's interesting because, you know, I don't think people are necessarily inherently selfish. Really, I think we're almost taught to be more selfish than we naturally would be, right? Because kids can be so kind and sharing and whatnot, right?
Like, but they can also be very selfish.
Oh, kids, absolutely. They absolutely can be, but they also can be not that. And they're learning to kind of be people. And what I'm saying is that you can kind of guide kids into sort of you can guide kids into being sort of one way or the other, and not just through telling them, you know, what they should do, but also from the lessons that they sort of subconsciously learn through living in this society. And the society that we live in right now is one that kind of teaches you a little bit, in a lot of cases, to kind of just look out for yourself, right? Like, when you get a job, if you get your first job, you're on minimum wage. I was working, and I thought, I'll work hard, because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to work hard, and that's a good thing. You'll be rewarded. It's good for everyone. That is not what happens. If you have a job and you're on like sort of hourly wage, or you're on minimum wage, especially if you're on a minimum wage, do as little as you possibly can, because no one else is going to reward you for it, right? Like, that is the society that we live in right now. But we absolutely could have one where you're rewarded, like, for helping others, because helping others in itself is rewarding, right? Like, if you help support other people, they help support you. It is good for everyone. Mm. Oh my God. Altruism, it works? Crazy. Let's get back to serial killers.
Yeah, let's.
So ASPD, antisocial personality disorder. We could do a whole episode on it, but let's just quickly run through it now. The NHS says that it's a particularly challenging type of personality disorder characterized by impulsive, irresponsible, and often criminal behavior. Now, I find that interesting, right? That this disorder, it's kind of, on the NHS, is tied to criminal behavior there, which makes sense. I understand how that works, but criminal behavior is something that is pretty much entirely subjective, right? You know, because laws can change, all of that sort of stuff. I don't think that's the best way to describe it. I mean, yes, societally, it does make sense, and it is an easy way for people to understand what is going, I guess, sort of the outcomes, but it doesn't necessarily help you understand the underlying psychology there.
Yeah, and also if you're, like, looking up symptoms of, like, whatever how you think you have, and you come upon, like, the NHS website, and it's like, oh, you've just been diagnosed with this thing? Yes. Criminal behavior. It's kind of already assigning like a negative, which I'm sure the experience, like living in the society that we live in, having a disorder like that, like must be difficult. But immediately, like on the first page when you go on the website, for it to be like criminal behavior, pretty much.
But equally, I also wonder if like if somebody's trying to. So, for example, I know that one of the expressions of ASPD. ASPD in like childhood is often like killing cats. I think I've read a lot about that before.
Really?
Like just like getting enjoyment from like killing cats or killing like rabbits or stuff like that.
Small
like,
interesting. But then what's interesting to me is that, you know, people will kill bugs for like and get enjoyment out of that, right?
Yeah, but the cat kind of gives you feedback that it's not having a good time.
No, I know. I'm not saying that they're the same thing. But what I'm saying is that people will get enjoyment out of killing bugs. People can get enjoyment out of killing, you know, like even things a little bit bigger, you could get up to maybe like mice. Someone could enjoy having a mouse trap and be like, I got you, mouse. Yeah,
yeah, sure,
absolutely. And it's so weird to me how our empathy, sort of our level of empathy, changes based on what we kind of find cuter, right? I mean, I understand the difference that they're giving you different feedback.
Yeah.
Generally, for most people, you're gonna be getting a certain emotional response from a rabbit that you wouldn't be getting from, say, like a little salamander. Oh my god, salamanders are cute though. Or like a little bug or something, yeah. Right?
And ants can't scream
in a way that you can hear, but oh boy, do those pheromones.
But what I wonder about there is, like, if you're somebody who's grown up with ASPD and you kind of like, you know, you're actually just Googling your own thing.
Yeah.
And you see on there potentially criminal behavior, that might, if you've like had a past of like killing cats and rabbits,
yeah,
and stuff,
that could be, it might make me like,
I'll go and seek help, because I don't necessarily want to be on this, and I'll go and seek help, and I at least have an explanation as to why I did that.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, I'm the worst, I'm the Satan spawn or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but unfortunately, our justice system just isn't really set up for anything like that, right? Yeah. I mean, the fact that the NHS is saying, hey, this disorder can often lead to criminal behavior. Oh, do we not have any accommodations for that? Do we send those people to jail still? Maybe if there's an increased chance of committing a crime, we should then restructure our prison system such that it's entirely rehabilitative rather than punitive and all of that nonsense, right? Because punishing people for things like this, it's not necessarily going to help. We're not talking about serial killers right now, by the way. Punishing serial killers is, I would say, largely kind of fine, right? I mean, you're not gonna, I mean, it's, I feel like this is a difficult one, right? Rehabilitation with serial killers, is it possible? I don't know, because how often do we actually catch serial killers and get them behind bars? But let's get back to the ASPD, right? So just very, very briefly, the sort of signs, symptoms of this. It says a person with antisocial personality disorder might exploit, manipulate, or violate the rights of others, lack concern, regret, or emotions about other people's distress, behave irresponsibly, or show disregard for normal social behavior, have difficulty sustaining long-term relationships, be unable to control their anger, lack guilt, or not learn from their mistakes, blame others for problems in their lives, and repeatedly break the law. You know, I mean, and it says here that they could have a history of conduct disorder during childhood, such as truancy, delinquency, other disruptive or aggressive behaviors. So, I mean, to understand it in the simplest possible way, antisocial personality disorder is kind of the label that we give to people who are very disruptive and kind of break a lot of social norms in a way that is generally kind of harmful or disrespectful or not necessarily empathetic to the rights and, you know, feelings of others.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a... I follow a few people on TikTok with ASPD. It's very interesting to hear them talk about stuff, because they're like fully aware of like their diagnosis and their motivations behind it. But it's very interesting to, like, some of them will be asked questions like, so like your boyfriend cheats on you, what do you do? And they just go through this most like ruthless like punishment for him. And they're smiling through the whole thing. It's very interesting.
But what's interesting to me about that is, and I want to be very clear, I don't think that, you know, everyone who has ASPD is a horrible person who's a criminal.
Obviously not.
We shouldn't be tying them so tightly to serial killers, right? There are so few serial killers and so many people with ASPD. Like, these two things are not as neatly linked as people might want to think, right? Yeah. But what I find interesting is that I get stuck on TikTok looking at all of these am I the asshole things on Reddit.
Yeah. rather
than going to Reddit itself I get stuck on TikTok having an automated voice read it out to me. And I like to look through the comments every now and then, and dear God, are those people vindictive. Like, they will do and they will say, oh, you should do this horrible thing to your boyfriend for what could be a misunderstanding. Yeah. Like, seriously, some people are way more vindictive than I'd like to think they are.
That was one of the things about the internet as well, about trolling and things like that, is that because of the way that you're bringing in the information, it doesn't always trigger the empathy response that you'd get in what, like, looking at the person. And so it sort of makes us all a little bit less empathetic, because ultimately my sort of layman's understanding of it would be like, you have a stimulus, like, for example, you're
cutting open a rabbit and it's screaming, and the stimulus of like the screaming sort of does something, it stimulates something that changes the behavior in the brain, and then in most people they then change course.
Yeah.
If they're like halfway through killing a rabbit, you probably haven't got that far. if you have your empathy center and it's doing its job, you probably haven't got that far to the fact the rabbit's screaming. But yeah, you're sort of, there's a behavior, some part of your brain is doing a behavior, and then some stimulus goes, no, let's not do that behavior. Mm-hmm. But we are not set up for that via the internet. We don't. There isn't a way of like conveying a piece of information necessarily that will then trigger the correct part of the brain, the empathic response that changes the behavior.
Well, yeah, I think what people don't seem to consider a lot is that you consciously thinking something doesn't mean all that much necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's not how your brain always works. There's a lot of brain going on underneath that consciousness that your consciousness isn't super aware of. And just because you're consciously aware that you're speaking to another human person on the internet, that doesn't mean that all of those bits underneath that usually do the work to make you, you know, I guess, be a generally all right person to other people, doesn't mean that those bits underneath are going to understand that they're talking to another actual person.
There's a really interesting thing on this. So earlier on, Corey, you were talking about how the individualistic society sort of has given us a false understanding of genes and about evolution. So the popularization of roughly what you're talking about there was by Richard Dawkins in his book, The Selfish Gene, which like popularized this new understanding of genetics, invented the word meme, and also sort of led us to understand genetics in terms of like, why does the runt of the litter voluntarily kill itself? It's not because it wants to die. It's because the copies of its genes are in its brothers and sisters. And so it's not better for the species, it's better for the genes that are present in both that dog and also its brothers and sisters. And before that, the precursor to that, to Dawkins' selfish gene, was these two scientists who basically did some calculation, they had some formula that basically helped them come to the conclusion that the best thing that a human being can do for itself and for its genes is to be empathetic and help other people.
Yeah.
But the same formula also came to the conclusion that the other best thing that somebody can do is kill distant relatives of themselves. So identify who is the furthest away from me, relatively speaking. So who is like the most not my brother, most not my family, and kill them.
How does that benefit?
Because when you are being altruistic, you are helping copies of your own genome, right? Yeah. So, like, there's a certain amount of my genome that's also in you. There's a certain amount of my genome that's also in Curry, right?
Hey, get out of here.
Whoa. What have you been doing to us, bro?
God, sorry, that took me way longer than I should have done. Okay. So, there's a certain amount of my genes that are also in most of the people I know, right? Yeah. And so... Stop!
Really? I don't know about that. I've not heard this.
I've got some explaining to do to my wife. No, God, stop it. Okay, let me just phrase this. We share some of the same genes.
From cum.
No! You're not even throwing subtlety out the window there. No, thank you very much. So we share in our cells some of the same genes.
Okay.
Right? And from the perspective of those genes that we share, it is in their interest for us to help each other, right?
Yeah.
But then, whoever is least related to you...
Oh, so not distant relatives.
The most distant
relatives. Everyone is
relative.
Related.
I see what you mean. Okay. So I thought you meant like, oh, your third cousin. Murder them.
Right? No. Like, as distant as... the person on the planet who is the least genetically related.
Yeah, that makes way more sense.
Basically, what I was getting at was that this precursor to the selfish gene theory was these two scientists, and they came up with this formula that was like, oh, you should be good to everyone, but then the same outcome was also you should be bad to the people furthest away from you.
Be good to people, nice to you, be bad to people. Oh, they just invented racism again. Gosh,
they just,
darn it.
Yeah, so, it was kind of...
It's so easy to do a racism, right? Like, it's so... You always come back to it. It's racism, eugenics, we're always falling into it. Anyway, I'm cutting that. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
He's ringing again. Why is he ringing this time, Corey?
He's ringing for After Dark Luke.
Why have we gendered our ad bell, Corey?
Because he's a boy and I want to respect him just like I respect After Dark, our sister show to this podcast, Sci Guys. After Dark is what happens after Sci Guys ends. We just chat about whatever we want to chat about.
If you've ever been listening to SciGuys and gone, God, I wish there were less facts, then you can listen to After Dark. I wish there were more opinions in this show.
More philosophy and politics.
Yes, After Dark is the show where Corey and I sit down, and maybe with a guest sometimes, sit down and discuss just more sort of floaty, woo-woo-y ideas about things we think with our brains.
And where can they watch this wonderful, wonderful show, Luke?
Well, they can listen to it and watch it at patreon.com/SciGuys, our Patreon, where you can also support us and help us keep doing this thing that you apparently like us doing.
Did you say patreon.com/SciGuys?
Yes, I think I did. I think I did say patreon.com/SciGuys.
Well, if you want to listen to After Dark, it seems like you should get to patreon.com/SciGuys.
That's patreon.com/SciGuys, in case you weren't paying attention.
Now pay attention, because we're about to start the show.
Oh, my attention has been paid and will continue to be paid until the end, when I go home.
So I guess the question that comes next is, why do people become serial killers? We already know what serial killers are. We understand some of the psychology that some serial killers may have, you know, that sort of lower empathy and whatnot. But why do people become serial killers? One of the main things is child abuse, apparently.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, treating kids not nice makes them less nice as adults sometimes. That's something that seems
to
happen.
It's crazy that the way you treat your children affects the rest of their life.
Yeah, and how they treat other people.
Yeah.
It's almost as though raising a child is a really important thing that we should all actually consider how we're going to go about doing it before we decide to pop a couple out.
Yeah, maybe.
And maybe people should have more support in raising children. Maybe we should help people understand the best practices for raising children. And we should make it so that raising children isn't something that's harder if you have less wealth.
You bloody commie.
Commie?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, well, yeah. Wasn't an insult. It's a statement.
So the World Health Organization they define child abuse as all forms of physical and or emotional ill treatment. I don't want to talk about all of this. Look, you know what child abuse is, right?
Yeah.
Negligence, abuse, all kinds of abuse, all of that sort of stuff. Exploitation that results in actual or potential harm to the child. I mean, that covers basically all child abuse. But you know, when people are researching sort of serial killers, a thing that comes up a lot is abuse during childhood. And I want to briefly talk here about the studies that people do on serial killers. As I said, a lot of them are case studies. A lot of them are things that look at a few different serial killers that have been caught, and they try to say, okay, what are the things that tie them together?
Yeah.
I already take issue with the way that this is done, because this is such an uncommon kind of crime, and I think trying to sort of tie such a sort of strict thread on this is maybe not the best way to go about it. Mm. It's almost, I feel like you might almost be kind of, is it begging the question? I feel like you might almost be sort of looking for the answer that you think you're going to find, right?
Yeah.
You're going to find the answer that you think you're probably going to find, because you're kind of setting yourself up for it. I'm not saying that all of those studies are doing that, but just from what I've seen looking at sort of the overall kind of studies on serial killers, it seems like a bit of an odd area of study to me, because there's not a lot on the overall psychology of serial killers. There's not a lot on, you know, sort of that more sort of in-depth stuff that I would have wanted to look at. It's mostly looking at either individual case studies or trying to look overall and say, oh, what are these general things that maybe tie these groups together? Mm. There is a strong link between early childhood abuse and people who kill for sexual gratification, apparently. But, you know, I mean, essentially, childhood abuse is linked to serial killers' later behaviors, but we don't understand sort of how child abuse then leads to different types of serial killer. Because, you know, obviously there are different kinds of serial killer. There's people who are serial killers who sort of commit sexual violence. There's people who are serial killers who sort of taunt the police and leave riddles and act kind of like a Batman villain. There's people who do it, you know, as a power thing. And that's actually probably the main reason for serial killing.
Yeah.
No matter sort of whether it's, you know, through sexual abuse or for sexual gratification or whatever, the power imbalance there, the sort of power, holding power over someone, is what seems to come up an awful lot when you look at studies on serial killers.
Because obviously a lot of the causes of being a serial killer are dependent on, like, not how they're socialized, but their life experiences. Mm-hmm. Is there anything on people who are just like have a completely normal life, an absence of any, like, those kind of negative experiences, and they still end up being a serial killer. I guess, is ASPD something that you're born with?
I'm not so sure. So ASPD is something that I think can only be diagnosed in adulthood. So we did an episode on oppositional defiant disorder recently. I mean, I say recently, it was last year.
Yeah.
It was this year, actually. We did one quite recently. But I think the issue is that ASPD is kind of a diagnosis that leads on from a previous diagnosis in childhood often. And so it's kind of difficult to say, is that something that's inbuilt? Is that something that comes from environment? In all likelihood, it's probably a bit of both. Right? But in terms of, I guess, sort of serial killers that led otherwise normal lives.
Yeah.
It's a tough thing to look into because there's such a sensationalized view of serial killers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, the fact that there's so many TV shows about all these different serial killers and, oh, how interesting are they? This person that seemed totally normal, this charming, this charismatic person.
Ugh.
Like, it's, you got, there's a lot to wade through, right?
Yeah.
You know, I made the choice before I started this episode. I did not want to turn this into a true crime podcast. I'm not going to sit and talk about John Wayne Gacy or, Jeffrey Dahmer for the entire time because I don't find that remotely interesting.
Let's go into grisly details of somebody's murder.
It's a couple guys. It's a few blokes that murdered horribly a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's terribly worthwhile to spend a lot of time getting into the heads of such a small group of criminals. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there are better ways to spend our time. And also, dragging, you know, family's trauma out into the open is just a horrible thing to do.
Well, that literally exact thing happened to me. Like, my cousin was very brutally murdered, like, 10 years ago.
Mm.
And, like, Sky News were trying to make... Well, like, Sky were trying to make a documentary about it, all that, blah, blah, blah. It was on the news, it was on TV, like, everywhere.
Mm.
Like, you can Google it, and it's pages and pages and pages. But I found a few podcast episodes about it, and I was like, whoa, these people don't really think about how they're impacting people's lives. Because it's one thing doing, like, a true crime episode about, like, somebody whose family member, like, died, like, 200 years ago. And there's a difference between that and, like, people doing it for stuff that happened recently where their families are still, like, dealing with the aftermath of it.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. It's really, especially with a serial killer, right?
Mm.
Because with serial killings, it separates itself from other murders, where a lot of murders are from people that you know, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the most common things. You're murdered by someone that you know. It's not a common thing to be murdered by someone that you know. It's common in murders for the...
That's one of the most common things.
It happens to us all.
You know,
there's
that
cars,
feel
there's
when
dogs,
you're murdered
there's
by
cats,
someone
and then being murdered by somebody you know.
A lot of murders are committed by, you know, someone that knows the victim.
Mm.
Whereas serial killings kind of diverge from that a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Because of the nature of that kind of crime. And what's really mad to me is that we not exactly venerate these serial killers, but just like a little bit we kind of do, right? And
way more than any other crime.
No, exactly, right?
It's not like, wow, what's the psychology of bank robbers?
But that's way more interesting to me.
The psychology of bank robbers.
I mean, the psychology of bank robbers, that's just how we get, what is it called? Stockholm syndrome, which doesn't even exist, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, how could you like a criminal that's kidnapped you whilst they're robbing a bank? Maybe because they're actually not as bad as the
sometimes
as the,
they're
as the police, you know. Yeah. But the point here is that with serial killers, you know, like it's one of those things where it's a lot. If you start bringing up the crimes of a serial killer, it's a lot of people who are kind of unrelated to the killer, but who have been victims of them, and it's a lot of families that are being reminded of probably the worst day in their life, and they don't. There's no closure because it's just, I guess, a senseless killing. They matched probably maybe a profile. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting murdered by someone who murders a lot of people.
And it's also interesting because, like, in terms of, like, true crime and that kind of stuff, when they're reporting on, like, serial killers, it's not like they're... If it was, like, a single murder, they'd go into the family and, like, what the person was like. But when it comes to serial killers, you're just, like, a data point. Like, if somebody has killed, like, 20 people, they're not going to give each victim the amount of respect that, like, they all deserve. It's just like, oh, so he killed this guy and then this guy and then this guy and then this guy.
I guess it's kind of... what you've just said there, Corey, is that, like, it's just random, wrong place, wrong time. It's kind of like... Maybe that's... It's kind of like how reporting on terrorism is so captivating when it happens, because exactly why what you've just said, because it's like you can't spot it.
Yeah.
Like, you could be, like, just going about your day. I sometimes get this moment where I'm, like, on a tube platform, or I'm, like, sitting outside at a restaurant on, like, a normal evening. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is what it was like for, like, the people in the Paris attacks.
Yeah.
They were just sitting like this, and then suddenly they were dead.
Yeah.
Like, that's so boggling to your mind because you can't possibly compute it, and you can't possibly try to foresee it in the way that you could try to spot if somebody in your friendship group is really aggressive,
or
try to spot if someone you're friends with has this condition where they don't have empathy, or like, try to spot things like that, which are actually like, you know, oh, I can do that. I can do some thinking about it. But if it's like, oh, you could be on a train, and that's it.
I mean, if we talk about the Zodiac Killer, it's, oh, I'm going out for lunch with my boyfriend. Oh, I'm sitting in the car. Oh, I'm doing this. Oh, I'm doing that. Like, yeah, it's just, you have no control over it. And it is, so it is a little bit more of a scary thing there. Obviously, it's super, super uncommon, like entirely. It's not something you should be staying up at night about. But yeah, and I mean, kind of bring it back to the true crime people. I mean, Noah, you said there that, you know, they, when it's serial killers, they wouldn't necessarily give all the victims the respect they deserve. But like, that's assuming that these people that sort of do true crime do give any respect to the victims at all. Yeah. I mean, and I think this is important to talk about, right? I mean, I kind of wanted to bring this up during, you know, during this episode, because I tried to look into the sort of parasocial relationships that surround serial killers, because yes, people have parasocial relationships with serial killers.
Yeah,
of course they do. You're not going to make a Jeffrey Dahmer show where you've got a stone cold hottie playing playing Jeffrey Dahmer.
Evan Peters and like Zac Efron.
Yeah.
And
why are you casting leading men to play these roles? Why are they so charismatic? Why is that the story that we're told? Oh yeah, serial killers are charismatic men that use their charming good looks and whatnot. No, they're not. Not in all cases. Sometimes they're just a dude who is getting away with a lot of murders.
Yeah.
Okay? Sensationalizing this, romanticizing this, having a parasocial relationship with someone who just kills people is so messed up. And honestly, true crime absolutely plays into that
100%.
In a lot of ways, because it sensationalizes, it romanticizes to some extent, and it also desensitizes people to these crimes.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say about true crime, I'm going on a mini rant here, we'll be done in just a sec, I'm sorry everyone. One thing about true crime is either change your name to murder porn or something similar that makes it very clear that you don't actually care about crime, you just care about talking about gruesome, grisly murders.
Yeah.
Or start covering other crimes, because hey, there are interesting crimes. I want to hear about fraud. I want to hear about identity theft. I want to hear about bank robberies. All of those things are really bloody interesting. Why is it always murders with you people? It's because you have some sick obsession with murder. Oh my God.
Do you know what I can smell right now? The comments of people being like, well, actually, true crime can be really helpful for solving mysteries, because actually putting out all this information into the world means that the normal people, the power will be put into their hands, and then they'll solve the crimes, and also they're respecting the victims.
Yeah, sure. I love unqualified people who don't understand the first thing about forensics, thinking that they are actually making any changes when they read something from Murderpedia. Yeah. I love it when white women talk about the trauma of people of marginalized identities for fun.
Yeah.
And before you try and point out the one or two true crime people that you know that aren't white women, most of them are white women. Okay? And that's not an insult to white women in general. I'm just saying that maybe it's a bit weird that, that this group of white people are focusing quite heavily on the trauma of a group that they don't necessarily exactly belong to.
Yeah, especially like the Jeffrey Dahmer stuff. Like, people really gloss over the fact that like the majority of his victims were like young black men. Gay black men.
Yeah, so true crime, I mean, it definitely, I think, you can see how it plays in to a lot of this sort of serial killer stuff, especially just through the sort of desensitization, right? And, I mean, we talk about parasocial relationships. We've done an episode on parasocial relationships with Shaba, which was absolutely fantastic.
That
one of my favorite episodes that we've ever done. And, you know, we could talk for days genuinely about parasocial relationships, because I don't think we consider how much they influence our lives, because You have a parasocial relationship with Ted Bundy. You have a parasocial relationship with Jeffrey Dahmer. I have a parasocial relationship with the bloody Zodiac Killer because Zodiac is one of my favorite films. And I think it's, I think that whole concept is very interesting, despite the fact that it's a horrific series of murders, right? Yeah. Like, my point here is that we need to be maybe a little bit more careful, a little bit more conscious, and a little bit more cautious about the way that our brains will sort of attach themselves to or sort of create relationships with people that we interact with in the media, yeah, right? Whether those people be real people, fictional people, serial killers, or anything else. If you see someone on a screen or if you read about someone or if anything like that happens, you're going to start a little relationship in your head with them. And you need to be on top of that. Because, yes, being a crazy fan who thinks they're best friends with Dan and Phil when in actuality they've never met them and Dan and Phil do not know or care about who they are is one thing. But being someone who has a weird obsession with serial killers and murderers and thinks that it's all right because it's quirky and kooky and they know that these things are horrible and, oh, look how desensitized I am, that is as bad, if not much, much worse.
Yeah, I feel like people just need to be a bit more self-aware about why they're consuming the content that they consume. Because if they want to watch true crime, like, fine. Like, go ahead. But my issue with it is just people being like, oh, no, I'm doing it for this reason. I'm doing it for this reason, and it's actually fine. It's like, it's not.
Mm.
But, like, go ahead.
Well, I mean, the thing is, ethical true crime, sure. Yeah. I mean, if there's consent from the families, if they're involved in it, sure. Yeah. But that's something you rarely find from podcasts and YouTube because they're taking it from other sources.
It's hard to do that properly when you're doing a brand deal.
Oh, no, exactly. Especially, like, it's hard to do that properly when you're selling murder merch, right? Like, yeah. I mean, you have a very, not a very unique experience, but you have a very uncommon experience of being someone who is very closely related to a story that is covered on true crime things. I mean, would you like to use this platform? Would you like to stand up on your soapbox and say how you feel about that specifically?
It's just weird. Like, because I remember when my cousin died. Like, she was, like, murdered, and it was bad, and it was, like, on the radio.
It's a horrible murder,
For, like, weeks and weeks and weeks. And, like, it's just weird, like, seeing that in an episode because, like, that's, like, my family.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, how my cousins reacted to it and, like, how my dad reacted to it. And I remember going to the funeral and all that stuff. And it's, like, such a personal thing. And for people to be making just, like, yeah, it's just, like, murder porn. And it's always quite lighthearted as well.
It's very detached,
yeah,
right?
It's very detached. It's weird. They don't see these people as people. They just see them as, like, cool little data points and, like, little stories.
I understand the sort of need to sort of lighten the tone because it is horrible. Yeah. Whenever we talk about really heavy stuff on this podcast, we do try and lighten it a bit.
Yeah.
But the difference between, I think the difference between us covering, say, you know, the Tuskegee syphilis experiment or covering any other number of horrible things that have happened to people throughout history, you know, in the name of science, is that we're not covering it because we enjoy it.
Yeah.
We cover so many different stories and sometimes we take on these really difficult ones because it's very important for you to know those. Is it important for you to know about every single murder that's happened in the past 50 years? I don't think so.
Okay. It's also very unlikely that somebody would listen to an episode about the Tuskegee syphilis experiment and then be like, ooh, I want to be an irresponsible scientist. Whereas people covering terrorist attacks and mass shooting attacks and probably serial killings inspires other ones because they're so venerated and so admired.
Like, exactly.
We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. We're not going to cover a story from the 1940s about an irresponsible scientist and then some scientist somewhere goes, I want to do bad science now.
No, I think, and yeah, I
then
think
I'll the, be on Sci Guys.
No, like, exactly. Like the humor, like the sort of levity that we bring to this is always with a tone of this thing is bad. Like we always make sure that is the core thing there. And I don't know. I just think that when it comes to true crime, it's really hard to separate it from talking about, you know, serial killers and the psychology surrounding that because you're just desensitizing yourself to these awful things for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
And like, look, I mean, I will ask you this one last thing on true crime, Noah.
Yeah.
And you don't need to answer it, but if you do, it'd be fantastic. If you could look to the camera here and just maybe say any message that you want to anyone who's thinking about doing true crime videos as someone who is very much directly related to one of those stories.
Maybe don't do that. Maybe don't do that. Like, even, oh God, I don't remember what it was. I saw this tweet like a year ago and it was a brand deal from some true crime YouTuber or podcaster or whatever. And they posted a tweet and they were like, here's the murder of this guy that was murdered a year ago. Get like 15% off for this thing. And it's like, you are so, so desensitized to that. It's insane.
And
but
you
yeah.
can buy your PsyGuys branded daggers at PsyGuys.co.uk.
Right?
Like, seriously, I swear to God, imagine if we started selling merch that was related to this Tuskegee yeah. syphilis experiment or eugenics. Oh, little eugenics. Oh, I survived eugenics pin badges. Like, that is horrific. Think about what you're doing. You lack so much yeah. empathy and you're spreading that to your audience.
I just think it's worth saying that, like, there is value in learning about, like, the psychology of why people tend to do things that they do, but that's not the same as there being value in, like, getting into the grisly details of how somebody was murdered. Because yeah. that's what true crime is about. It's not like, oh, here are the internal thought processes of this psychopath, and this is where it comes from, and here are studies about it. It's literally just like, here's what this guy did. He stabbed the hell out of someone, and then he buried them, and then he dug them up.
It's a lot more porny than that.
Yeah, look, it's way worse.
And then he ripped yeah. this bit of...
Yeah, and there's, like, dramatic music in the background, and I'm just like, that is somebody's... family.
Yeah, that's someone's mother, father, son, daughter, sibling, and uncle. You know what I mean? Like, it's someone that someone is related to, that someone knows. It was someone's friend. They had a whole life.
Yeah.
And instead of focusing on maybe the how, for example, of how someone was caught, or the yeah. why, for example, of why someone would be led to do this, you focus on the what.
Yeah.
You're only focusing on the what. We don't focus on the what when yeah. we cover these things, right? And, like, you might be wondering, oh, Corey, this is an episode on serial killers, the science of serial killers. Why are you spending so much time talking about true crime? Why are you spending so much time not talking about the psychology of serial killers? Because I want this episode to be about the psychology of serial killers and also about maybe the psychology behind why people really, really want to see an episode on the psychology of serial killers.
Yeah, you weirdos voted this one in.
Look, our patrons are great. No, our patrons are absolutely fantastic. But what I will say is that this show, I wouldn't say that we're afraid to have difficult conversations or say things that might make you uncomfortable to think about or, you know, contend with. And I will say to our audience, to our patrons, maybe consider why it is that you want to understand, why it is you want to see an episode on serial killers, right? Why you want to see us delve into that topic? Is it because you want to understand this weird quirk of humanity more deeply?
I think probably, yeah.
Maybe, but is it also because you've been somewhat desensitized to the concept of serial killing? You think it's a much more common thing than it is, and you want to understand it on some weird, macabre sort of, you know, like... visceral level.
Kinky level.
Well, not kinky, Luke. but I mean, like, there is like a sort of almost, like, it is this very sick thing, but there is some kind of pleasure in trying to understand that. And yeah, that's all I'll say, that, like, consider why you engage with the content that you engage with. If you're into true crime, ask yourself why. Ask yourself what it's adding to the world. Ask yourself what you're actually getting from it.
Yeah.
And I guess that is the episode on serial killers. There's some other things I've got there about female serial killers. We could do maybe a whole bonus episode on this one paper that I found that looks at the sort of behavior sequence analysis of serial killers' lives. It looks from childhood abuse up to methods of murder. Mm. And we can do a bonus episode on that. Sure, we can look into that sort of psychology. But for an episode that's going out to everyone, yeah, we can touch a little bit on the psychology of it. But let's touch on the psychology of the people that are interested in serial killers too, because that is far more interesting yeah. and I think far more relevant and important than looking at the very small number of the population that are serial killers.
Yeah.
Well, with that, there is only one thing left, I think. Maybe it's a quickfire quiz.
Dun 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 dun. Serial killer edition.
Deary me. Well, the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer wins. What do they win, Luke?
A guest spot on a true crime podcast.
Surely that should go to the loser. Anyway, Luke, what is your buzzer?
Oh, dear. Let's be sensitive here. Ooh.
Noah, what is your buzzer?
Ah, always.
Very good. Okay, so my question for you both today is... what does ASPD stand for?
Ooh.
That was such a faint
That's because I heard him say it already.
Antisocial personality disorder.
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct, Noah. That means, unfortunately, you will have to guest on a true crime podcast. I don't make the rules. Blame Luke. But thank you for joining us. And I think we need to say thank you to some patrons. Would you like to join in with that, Noah?
Sure.
I really hope there's somebody who runs a true crime podcast watching. We'll offer Noah up if you'd like him as a guest. But he will criticise what you do the entire time.
Yes, I would just stare at you the entire time and think,
He'll also make recording quite difficult.
Yeah.
The amount of coughs we've had to edit out of this episode.
I love that you're using we.
There he goes.
Well then, let's get started. So, thank you to Ellie.
Thank you, Samia McQueen.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Karen Elfwing.
Thank you, Amelia Blake.
Thank you, Nez.
Thank you, Chelsea Lynn.
Thank you, Devin Malsom.
Thank you, Sia Riley.
Thank you, Ian Altenor.
Thank you, Crimson Foster.
Thank you, Leilani Neves.
Thank you, Carlin Sebrecht.
Thank you, Asylum.
Thank you, Lucy Blades.
Thank you, T. Quinn.
Thank you, Noe, pronounced like Joey, but with an N.
Thank you, Natalia the Weirdo.
Thank you, Jack is here. Where is he? Or she or they?
Thank you, Huckagay_.
Thank you, Rosie Dickinson.
Thank you, Noosh or Nush or whatever other vowel sound you can make.
Nush. Thank you, Papa the Smurf.
Thank you, Riley Johnson.
Thank you, Danny Lee.
Thank you, Heidi Pregetela.
Thank you, Kira Hart.
Thank you, Joy Draws.
Thank you, Vin Shoken.
Thank you, Clay.
And finally, thank you, Tyler LeChance. Wow, bunch of patrons to end the year. Thank you. Big old round of applause for you all. This is the last patron vote episode of the year, but we've got a whole bunch of new ones coming for you next year. So if you want to be involved in the episodes that we do for SciGuys, go ahead and join our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys. We're going to be redoing it a little bit. We're going to be adding a few tiers. We're going to be making some changes in the new year. So you want to get involved and make sure you're there for that, because, oh boy, there's a bunch of good surprises for you. But I think that's it from us. Thank you for joining us, Noah. Everyone, go ahead and listen to Noah's music if you want. Also, Noah and I have done a little cover that's going to be coming out in a few days. It's for charity. So if you want to go and watch that, head to my channel at youtube.com/notcory. But that is it from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
You can follow me at NoFince everywhere, apart from TikTok where it's TheNoFince and Twitter where it's NoFinAdams.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.